This is the Past Lives podcast, episode 25, and I'm your host, Simon Bale. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And you can visit my website at www.pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. This week I'm talking to Wendy Rose Williams about her near-death experience, reincarnation, and her book, Regression Healing 1, The Huntsman, The Lord High Mayor, and The World War II Soldier. Wendy, thank you very much for coming onto the Past Lives podcast. It's really kind of you to give us your time. And I invited you on because I was reading your book and I found it so interesting. So could you tell us about your book?
Yes. Well, thanks for having me here, first of all, Simon. Regression Healing 1, The Huntsman, Lord High Mayor, and World War II Soldier came about because I offered a friend a session because he was having a lot of physical pain. He had broken his neck and just had had a lifetime as an athlete. So lots of neck pain, upper back, and really tight shoulders. And so that was the original impetus to it. And then the book just, the session just took on a life of its own and just really went so many places because we had had a lot of lives together. And to my surprise, once we were in session, he started really bringing up a lot of those. And it just gave us this tremendous opportunity for us to learn to just truly forgive each other for so many experiences. There'd been so many wonderful ones, and there'd been a lot of really challenging ones too, including the ones that led to his physical pain, what I'd call lifetimes of origin.
You described this session as being the ultimate lesson in forgiveness.
Yes. We knew we'd had some lives that I in particular had just not let go of emotionally. I was having a lot of trouble forgiving him, and he had some of that same issue with me too. So we had dated, we'd been romantic partners in this lifetime. We had broken up and we had worked our way back to being very good friends, but it was just always challenging. There just was a lot of past life energy that would keep coming up, and we would keep re-meeting. We would think, okay, you know, we're done. This is great. We've learned our lessons, and we would work to part, and then we'd run into each other again. And the ways we were running into each other were really kind of unusual. They just didn't make a lot of sense. They would really catch both of our attention. And it just was an opportunity to move into forgiveness. And the bottom line was, we found out that I was involved in one of the lives that he was carrying this physical pain from. So we really, really had to forgive each other. And I had to learn how to forgive myself, because it was hard to share the book publicly because it just felt so personal. It wasn't a typical session at all, where you may not have known the person at all previously, because you don't need to have a great session together. But in other instances, there's a very good reason why that therapist is offering a session to someone, or why a client is contacting a therapist and saying, I really feel like I'm supposed to work with you.
In the book, you say emotions are timeless and are stored at the soul level.
Yes. I believe that we are eternal souls and that we reincarnate many times to continue to learn lessons to allow us to progress at the soul level. And I don't believe that we're able to fully heal when we go home. I do believe that our soul travels, let's just call it home, to the universe, to the light, whatever term is good for you and for listeners. And I don't believe we 100% heal there, because why would we then have disease? Why would we then have you know, just emotional pain. Why would we have all these things going on? Yes, they can be learning opportunities too.
And I suppose, in a way, emotions are part of karma if you're carrying it from life to life.
Yes, that I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, that makes good sense. Yes.
You called the client Simon, which I thought was a really good idea.
Funny coincidence, yes.
Yeah. While you were doing the recording, one of your MP3 recorders failed. So why do you think this happened?
I think there was so much energy between the two of us that we needed to clear that was what the issue was. It can just jam up electronics, so to speak. And also, I had a writing block. I knew I was meant to be writing, and I would try, but I just couldn't seem to figure out which book to bring to completion because I'd started a lot of them. And I just was very, very busy. And it's super time consuming, especially if you don't have down a good practice and a good rhythm of how do you start the book and, you know, end the book and get all the pieces to come together of the editing and the test readers and how do you publish it and all those pieces. So I just had a lot of blocks around it. And because the recorder failed, I couldn't just give them an MP3 like I normally would. The one recording that was there was on my phone and I couldn't hand my phone over to someone else. So I ended up typing it as a transcript, thinking it would simply be a transcript. And then it became very clear that what was meant to happen was for it to instead be a book. Because when I looked at my transcript the first time I took a little stretch break after typing for a couple hours on a Saturday, I looked down at it and to my surprise, it had a title and it had my name is the author, and it said table of contents. And I even had written a couple notes to myself that was just my higher self and guides coming through. I was not conscious of it all, saying, you know, like add a forgiveness resource at the end of the book and that sort of thing. So that was really surprising to me. And I'm very grateful it occurred that way, or I think I would have still been kind of struggling with and might not have published.
And you're planning more books that will be like this, kind of transcripts with clients?
Yes, I've got two things going in the writing arena. One is I'm going to continue what I'm calling the regression healing series, because that's simply the name of the modality I use when I'm doing past life regression with clients. And it will be some of the most interesting client sessions that are applicable to a lot of different listeners. And it might be a really important common theme like forgiveness again in the future, or, you know, something else that's universally applicable. And I also have a fiction series that's called The Flow, and I've got The Flow Plymouth Plantation will kick off that series, and it will be out in the next month or so. So two series.
Okay. And are the fiction books based on previous lives?
They are. The fiction series is inspired by my own spiritual awakening and by the tremendous number of past lives of my own that I have found and been able to work with to heal and release that energy. I have found more than 70. I've stopped counting at this point. It's not about the number. It's about getting yourself really healthy and happy and well-balanced. So the number doesn't matter. A person might only need to find one or two or three, or perhaps they don't need to find any at all. It's just very different for all of us.
And in this life, then, this kind of points out that you're a very spiritual person, very much aware of that side of life and a death, I suppose you could say. But is that, do you think, because you're maybe a very advanced soul, or is it just part of the lesson for this life? And the next life, you might be not at all spiritually aware.
Couple of great questions packed in there. I feel very fortunate to be spiritually aware and awake now, but that came on late in life. It did not come up for me at all until about 7 or 8 years ago, when I met the soulmate that I called Simon in the book. And it was like not even on my radar until that point. And the term advanced soul, it's just, I don't really know what to make of it. I feel like we've all got something to contribute, and I feel like some things come more easily to us than others, but I've got plenty of things that I'm still working on, yet other areas, things flow very, very easily. And I do feel very fortunate that I can hear my guides very clearly, for instance, now that I've worked on that for 7 or 8 years.
Do you think this is because you're an advanced soul?
I believe I'm here as a volunteer, honestly, meaning that I've completed my cycle of reincarnation, and I so love Earth. I so adore the physicality, the wonderful privileges that we get from that. I adore nature, I adore animals, and just so many things, as well as human emotions and relationships and so many things that are here. So I volunteered to come back and help others heal and release pain, because there's so many people carrying so much physical and emotional pain, and they just don't know how to release it. Meditation is a great way. There's so many ways. Certainly, past life regression is one of my favorite go-tos. Reiki healing. There's just so many wonderful ways. But people need to be taught, because otherwise they just keep carrying, you know, use the analogy of baggage. It's like we've got these overwhelming trunks of baggage just weighing us down. And boy, is it powerful to be able to just release it and let it go.
Now, going back to Simon, I got the impression in the book that you had had many lives with him. Is that right?
Correct. We were very, very surprised. The first moment we met each other in 2010, we both knew there just was such a feeling of deja vu. It's like I just couldn't take my eyes off him. And we met at a restaurant. And I was sitting on the bench because I got there first. So sitting like in the entryway waiting. And I couldn't stand up. And he came in and he knew me immediately. I mean, there were several people sitting around and he walked right over to me. Granted, he'd had people don't always look like their pictures either. And he walked right over to me and he just looked at my face so closely. And he actually dropped down on his knee to look at my face more. And I mean, we must have looked really funny. And I don't think either of us cared or was even conscious of it. It's like the whole world went away. And it's like, I know this man. I absolutely know this man. And then we both just stood up and went and got seated. And I think we were at lunch for 3 hours that first day. I only left very regretfully because I had to get back to work.
Well, that's quite a lunch.
Yes.
So during the regression with him, you went to a place that you described as the place of all knowledge.
Yes. A lot of people relate to the term Akashic records, or they'll see it as like a hall of records or as a big library. But I believe that there is a place where all of the information about all of our lives is stored. And I don't want to make it too specific for people. So I just try and make it a bit more generic and call it the place of all knowledge. And because I invite clients to submit written questions that I'm then going to interview their higher self and guides on their behalf, that's typically where we get the answers, as we go to that place of all knowledge. Certainly, their questions may get checked off as they're going through a past life experience or in a healing temple or wherever else during session. But we typically do go to the place of all knowledge too, and just check off the rest of those questions.
that space that he described, is it pretty much the same as other clients describe?
There's some common denominators. The common denominators seem to be that a lot of people see it as this tremendously beautiful, very large library or hall of records. So that seems to be the way most people relate to it or describe it. But then everyone's got their specifics too. And many people are met by a greeter. I do ask a greeter or a guide to come forward when they're entering that place because they can be overwhelming. You know, okay, now I'm here and I just see all this information. How do I find my book of life, so to speak? So the guide or the greeter can just take the person right to that information. It just appears in different ways for different people because our psyches are all different. What we need is different.
So if you're saying our psyches are all different, are you saying that it's ourselves that would affect what we see?
I believe so, absolutely. It's why in near-death experiences, those seem to be quite influenced by the person's religious or spiritual beliefs, background. So, you know, certain people will, let's say if they're Christian or Catholic, they might more relate to angels, or they might say, I feel like I met Jesus and Jesus hugged me, enlightened me, helped me, or someone else might see Buddha or, you know, those types. There seems to be some kind of cultural conditioning. And other people cross over more easily and they're naming Ganesh, or they're naming things from other cultures that they don't like even know or relate to. And they'll say to me after the session, I'm not sure what I was talking about. And a lot of times I can help them figure out what those cultural references were to.
This is similar to people who have near-death experiences going
yes.
into the space. While they're having the near-death experience, it's like what they're seeing is also affected by their own consciousness and frame of mind.
Yes, yes. And that's what I love about past life regression and regression healing. It's like having the best of a near-death experience in many ways without that profound physical trauma that can lead to the near-death experience, you know, not having had that heart attack or having had that terrific car accident or, you know, whatever has caused and led to that near-death experience.
Do you feel that Simon is your soulmate or one of your soulmates?
I feel he is one of multiple soulmates. My personal belief is we have many soulmates and that they serve a lot of purposes, but at their core, they're teaching partners. They're to help us learn lessons, and they may be for companionship. Like you might have a soulmate that's a best friend, or you may have a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a child, a sibling can be a soulmate. It's just someone that we have a very profound relationship with and incarnate many times because we learn and travel through life together well. So yes, I believe he's one of multiple, and he did happen to be a romantic soulmate for a short time period.
Could you describe what changed for him when he returned to that lifetime of origin that was causing him pain?
He had a really powerful session in that he was able to connect with his higher self. And just the awe in his voice when that occurred for him, as well as he was able to connect with his guides. And with that and he typically just couldn't hear or seem to get in touch with his guides. And we figured out why during the session. So with that, with those new like foundations and tools and that new support in place, that allowed us to take him to two past lives that were really very, very challenging, where he was physically tortured, which is unusual. And I don't want people to get concerned and feel like, oh my goodness, I'm going to go through this really, really awful stuff. You go through what you're ready for. You go through what you need, and you're so loved and supported. But being able to go back to those lifetimes of origin, he had a tremendous physical healing, and just was able to communicate that to me right on the spot and say, oh my gosh, I can move my neck. My neck feels so much better. I can move my shoulders. My back is better. And he was literally saying, what did you do? It's like, I didn't do anything. This is you doing your work in just a really powerful way. And I'm just merely privileged to be the facilitator and to help you do that work.
You kind of said that he was shown those lives that were very difficult for him because that was what he needed.
Yes, exactly. He found and went through a life as a huntsman and then one as a mayor in France, a Lord High Mayor. I didn't even know that term, nor did he, which was really interesting that it came through so clearly for him. And I was able to look it up and to see that that was the correct term used at that time in France, which was kind of a real neat validation for both of us. And then he went through a World War II life, and he went through a fair bit of detail on each of those. And then we went to the Healing Temple, and he was able to do that very powerfully, and to just visualize different colors with their vibrational healing coming in, going to different parts of the body. And that was all wonderful. And then my check at the end of the Healing Temple is I always ask the higher self, the guides, the highest vibration energy that's there, did we get it? Did we resolve the issue that we came here for today? And I was really surprised to get a firm no from him. And he just, oh, you need to go to some other lives to heal those because you haven't found the life of origin. So that's when we were then taken to those other lives that were not so pleasant to listen to, but it's a moment in time and there's lots of techniques to be able to handle it. And what it does for you on an ongoing basis is really powerful because you've released it permanently then and you just don't have to deal with it again.
So it's that Simon's guide that decides for him which lives he's going to view during the regression.
Yes, that I'm so glad you're bringing that up. I view the higher self and the guides as being the architect, being this amazing, loving, wise support for what lives should be found, what lives can be healed and released. And they're never going to bring up anything other than love. I mean, they're just going to do it with love. And you're able to reframe things, even if they've been very challenging or were not loving at the time. And I just think that's such a fantastic point. Thank you for bringing that up.
And you mentioned the Healing Temple earlier. Could you give us more of a description of what happens there and what it is?
Sure. What I do, everyone needs healing. There's not a person on earth that doesn't need healing of some sort. And what we do is I invite each person to visualize the most beautiful place of healing that they can. And it might be something physical or architectural comes to mind, like a building that they enter. Some people go to a place in nature, like a waterfall, the beach, the woods. Some go to like a magical tree house. I mean, it can be just anything. So I just make sure that the person's got a great vision of what the healing temple looks like for them. And we invite the higher self to be fully in their body. We invite the guides to accompany them. We enter that building or wherever that location is, make sure they're really comfortable. You know, they choose, do they kind of see themselves lying down there? Do they see themselves sitting down? It's like some create a fire, some create a crystal bed. It can be, you know, anything and everything. And then we invite a series of healing lights, different lights to come in, go to a specific place on the body. And then they just simply tell me how that feels. And just the healing then takes place from that. Occasionally, people can't feel it easily. Simon was one of those. So we just switched to, well, then what do you see? What do you observe? Because he was super visual. So we just tuned into that sense instead. Or we can ask the person, you know, what do you sense? What do you know? What do you hear? We've got all our senses. So if they can't feel it right away, we just switch to some other senses.
So as Simon was able to connect quite powerfully with his higher self and the guides during this session, do you recommend that for everybody?
I do. I'm so glad that someone, a spiritual teacher, educated me to the possibility of, okay, once we understand the higher self as our soul, and a lot of us can then get a sense of that being at home, you know, being with the light, being in heaven. Well, why would I want the best of me if my higher self is the best of me? Why do I want it to be that separate from me? So I just started calling it into my body. And I just literally every morning as I would get up from bed, sit on the side of my bed for 15 seconds to, you know, kind of wake up and start the day, I would just call my higher self in and welcome it into my body. And over time, I found a profound difference and I could feel my higher self in my body. And I also knew when I wasn't being my higher self. And I learned to much more instantly forgive myself and just say, hey, shake it off, you know, be like a dog coming out of the water. Just shake that off your back real easily. And just call your higher self in again and get your guides more closely aligned.
Is it right you follow Dolores Cannon's method of past life regression?
Regression healing was inspired by Dolores Cannon's quantum healing hypnotherapy. You are correct. So a wonderful gentleman named Chris Turner was one of Dolores' students. Chris is over in the UK with you, Simon. And Chris then created regression healing as his own technique inspired by Dolores' quantum healing. So there's many, many similarities, yes.
Have you found that now that you've done a lot of training with this, because you were training with Brian Weiss, weren't you?
Yes, I am so thrilled. I had the wonderful opportunity to train with Brian and Carol Weiss, his wife, just a few weeks ago, last month in July. I flew out to New York, upstate New York, for a week and just had an amazing full week of training with them. And it was fantastic. People from all over the world were there. I couldn't believe how many countries were represented.
Have you found that being somebody who does past life regressions, has it really affected your life?
It's changed everything. The healing that past life regression brought in for me was there was an incredible amount of physical healing. I had severe chronic pain. I was to the point where I was so crippled up with it that I was almost in a wheelchair. I mean, I was just beside myself of how was I going to earn a living as a single mother with two daughters when it was getting to the point where I could hardly do any normal activities of daily living. And past life regression session after session, we got to more and more root causes of both the physical and the emotional healing that was needed. And as difficult as that was to go through over a multiple year period, I'm extremely grateful for it because it certainly taught me great empathy. And there's very few things that come up for clients that I haven't experienced myself. So it's just wonderful that I got put through the ringer. And I'm sure that was my own brave choice as a soul. I know it was. But sometimes we do have to kind of say to ourselves, what was I thinking? Yeah. Because we do choose some really, really challenging experiences. And I feel it is very valid to ask to understand why. You can do that during meditation. You can do that during a healing session. You can do that during past life regression. And to ask for more assistance with it. Because when we're planning from the other side before we incarnate, which is my belief that we pre-plan these lives, we have our free will, but so does everyone else. And we don't really know what all the circumstances are going to be. And some things can just be too much. So I've worked with several Lyme disease patients recently. And it was just an absolute thrill because that's not something that Western medicine can help with very effectively. In many cases, it can be really, really hard to find a Lyme doctor and to get relief from it. So to know that past life regression can be a fantastic tool and bring in the energy healing that way. And the person can ask, I mean, they can get their any diet information. That we always ask health questions. Every person, regardless of whether they're healthy and, you know, fit as a fiddle can be, we always ask, is there any changes that should be made in what I'm eating, what I'm drinking, you know, what I do for exercise? Do I need any supplements? And again, I love being able to do this work because I'm not telling the person. It's not a psychic reading where I can get something wrong. We're directly interviewing that person's higher self and guides, and they feel very comfortable and confident with the answers, as do I, because it's coming from them. So, and it's very empowering for people.
You were saying how we choose our lives and we choose how the life will turn out, but is yes. there part of that we can't choose because karma is getting in there and affecting us as well?
That's a fantastic question. I see karma as a teaching tool. I see that, yes, it can weigh us down. Back to that luggage analogy, just so weighed down by it. And until we can find ways to master the lesson and just cut those cords, life can be pretty darn challenging. That was a big part of the journey Simon and I had. We found we had a lot of karma between us, and that was not fun or easy to work through, but we were able to find out what the karma was for. And there's always antidotes to karma. Our biggest one, certainly was to fully forgive each other. So did I answer your question? Did I go off track there?
Yeah, I was just thinking, because, you know, I was saying that you make a life plan before you're incarnated.
Yes.
That is so that you learn a particular lesson in that life. And I was,
right.
I was kind of wondering if the karma can interfere with that and come in and drop a bomb on your life, or actually when you're planning your life, you take that karma into consideration, or you might be able to
yes.
look it up in a book and say, all right, I see what karma's doing now, so I'll have this type of life.
I think it's the latter. I believe we choose our lives very carefully with input from whether, it doesn't matter what term you use, counsel of elders, you know, whatever the term is. I believe that there are higher vibrational beings that help us plan our lives so that we can raise our vibration, learn as a soul, and progress. And that includes that there may be karma, which if you kind of see it as like an unbalanced scale, okay, what's it going to take to right this scale so that I then learn that lesson, master that lesson? So it's a question that I always ask toward the end of each client's session, ask the higher self and guides, is there any karma that needs to be addressed? Is there any karma that is not serving this person in this lifetime? And if so, what can we do to clear it up and clean it up? It's not about shortcutting. We want to be responsible. We want to learn our lessons. But what can we do? If you're dragging a 300-pound weight behind you because you feel guilty, is that necessary? Does that serve you in some way? Or do we need to bring in more self-love? Or, you know, why such guilt? Why carrying, you know, such a load behind us? Because if it's not empowering us, if it's not helping us in some way, let's cut those cords, my goodness.
And so I suppose with reincarnation, the point of having all these lives is to experience things and learn lessons, but running yes. parallel to that is your karma, and it may be that you'll have a life where you'll completely mess up your karma and it'll take lifetimes to sort it out, and where you could have been learning lessons, you've got to be working on your karma.
I think that's possible, certainly. It's just infinite possibilities. I believe mankind is doing a great job of raising its vibration and frequency, just like Earth has. I mean, Earth, we're going through some difficult things and we'll continue to, whether it's a volcano, a tsunami, you know, I feel that's Earth purging itself and raising its vibration and frequency. And yes, we have to be kinder to Earth and have less of a footprint on it. But I feel that we're all raising our vibration and frequency more. And I'm meeting more people where when I ask the question, is there any karma? I'm hearing from more, oh, wonderful, congratulations, there's none left. Or there's just this one thing we need to take care of so that the person is then consciously aware of it. And then they really free up. I mean, I love when people describe after a session and just say, oh my gosh, I feel lighter. I feel like the weight of the world is off my shoulders. I feel like I'm taller, one woman said to me. And it's like, well, that makes perfect sense because she had been weighing herself down with guilt for something that had occurred back in the 1800s, and she hadn't been able to forgive herself. And during the session, we were able to do that.
And so when you've cleared your karma, that's not an indication that you no longer need to reincarnate because you probably still have things to experience and learn.
Absolutely. I believe karma is just one teaching tool, and you may certainly choose to come back and work on other things. Just like soul contracts, I see as being a teaching tool. My belief is before we incarnate that we agree to certain soul contracts, which is just an agreement with another soul or souls of, hey, I'm working on this lifetime. Can we agree to this? And we're gonna meet, and this is gonna bring up this issue for me, you know, because that's the contract. Contracts can be very uplifting and wonderful too. I found my contract with Simon in my book, and he had the contract to wake me up spiritually and to get me to a life between lives, which is a Dr. Newton 4-hour, very deep hypnotherapy session where you spend a lot of time out of body at home. So, you know, that was a wonderful contract. He then also had the contract to break my heart repeatedly until I stepped into my power fully without abusing it. And I can tell you, I did not enjoy the break my heart repeatedly part, obviously. But it did have, I just wasn't stepping into my power. I would step into my power and then I'd like step back because I was a little bit afraid of it, because I had a fair bit of karma for having abused my power. So I was afraid to fully step into it, because what if I abused it again? So I had to get my own head straight, my heart straight, get my energy straight around those issues. And he helped me with it. So those are some examples of soul contracts.
You did have a near-death experience, didn't you?
I did. I had a near-death experience in 1997 when I was pregnant with my youngest daughter. I was at the end of my first trimester, so around 10 weeks pregnant. And I had... I was having a lot of precognitive dreams that were kind of foreshadowing what was to come, but I didn't understand them. And so I did keep calling the doctor. I'd called like 3 or 4 times in a week or two, which wasn't normal for me to do, particularly, you know, second pregnancy. You kind of often have your confidence and you know what's going on, but I just was incredible heartburn. And it just something didn't feel right. And so, you know, I'd gotten the go ahead. Sure. It's absolutely fine. You can take Mylanta. You can take as much Mylanta as you need to, you know, maybe you need to sleep propped up more, you know, don't have acidic foods, you know, that kind of thing, just common sense medical advice. But nothing was helping. And then I was, home alone, on a weekday afternoon working from home. And I just could not get comfortable. It's like, I felt like I was feeling this terrible pain. It's like, I just tried sitting, lying down, just, I couldn't get comfortable. And I had this just horrible feeling of like impending doom. And again, that was like very weird for me. That's not a normal feeling for me at all. And I was like, oh my gosh, I must need to be ill. I should go in the bathroom. Obviously, I'm going to, you know, throw up. I'm going to be ill. I just don't know what else to make of these sensations. And then I had just this horrible searing pain. It was like someone had taken a knife and just stabbed me in the abdomen. It was the worst pain of my life. And I felt something rip and tear. And I passed out on the bathroom floor. And I thought, when I came to, I thought, oh my gosh, my, you know, appendix must have ruptured, or I knew some organ had let go, which took me back to what the dreams had been at nighttime. And I couldn't walk. I couldn't get to the phone. It was way before cell phones. I didn't have a cell phone in my pocket. I had to get to a physical landline phone. And I, for the first time ever, clearly heard my guides. I felt like an angel came in and like picked me up and was very specific and said, you need to call for help now or you're going home. And that didn't sound good. And I just replied, I can't walk. And the angel said, I know, but you can absolutely crawl. So just crawl on over to the phone. It's not far away at all. It's going to be where I'm going to help you. And so I just got up off the bathroom floor, literally on my hands and knees, said, okay, I only have to make it to the bedroom. The phone's very close. I felt like I was lifted as I crawled along, and I called and I got help, and I was in the hospital for a week. But they were able to save my daughter's life too. It turned out it was the uterus had ruptured and it was an aorta. So I lost 3/4 of my blood supply. So I was very, very fortunate that I got to the hospital that quickly, and that they knew very quickly that I was losing an incredible amount of blood. I mean, you could just see, I was only 10 weeks pregnant, so I did not, you know, you don't show at 10 weeks yet, but you could see my abdomen rising like day by day that week I was in the hospital. It was very strange. And they said, you've got this huge blood loss going on. It's not where it should be. And it was from the uterus. So it's a miracle my daughter was able to survive that because she was already occupying it.
And did you have a out-of-body experience as part of that?
Yes, I did. I did. We didn't want to do surgery because I was pregnant. So they were trying other things, just blood transfusions, trying other things, you know, just having me stay in bed. I could not get up even to go to the bathroom, just, you know, have me see if we could just heal it by being in there with blood transfusions and just get it. But it became clear because my hematocrit kept dropping and I was going in and out of consciousness more and more often. I was losing consciousness more and more often. And I was really between worlds. I was having a lot of off-world experiences. And I guess it was getting pretty hard to get my attention when the nurses and doctors would come in the room. And so at that point, they're like, you need surgery. We really need to do surgery to repair whatever's going on. We'd done a bunch of ultrasounds, so they had a pretty darn good idea that it was my uterus, but it was hard to tell for sure because there was so much blood just blocking the views. So the night before surgery, I think I'd been in the hospital 4 or 5 days. And I finally agreed to do surgery. And that night, as I went to sleep before the surgery, I was so stressed. I was mostly stressed about the baby. I did not want to lose the baby. And, you know, here I'm signing paperwork. Yes, we're going to operate and it's probably going to be on my uterus. And I remember falling asleep, and first I thought it was a dream, but then I realized, wait a minute, my eyes are open, and I, you know, kind of pinched my arm. It's like, I felt that. I am awake. And I saw myself just very effortlessly like drift away from my body, up above my body. And I'm like, okay, that's really weird. What does that mean? And I like got up to the ceiling of the hospital room. I had my own room. And I remember looking back at my body and being shocked because I hadn't had a mirror. And I did not know how bad I looked until my soul was looking back down at my body. And I'm like, oh my God, I am whiter than the sheet from all the blood loss. And then I did have a really funny thought too. I looked down and I thought, well, they could have at least washed her hair. She looks like heck, which was just kind of funny. And then I just floated through the ceiling. It was just so gentle, so easy. And then I saw this big escalator. There was this tremendously long escalator because I was feeling really tired and weak. So it's like, okay, I just want to go up this escalator. So I just felt myself get on that escalator and just, I held on to the right handrail because I felt kind of woozy. And I just went up and up and up and up and up, like what would have been like 3 or 4 stories. I can't equate it. It just went on for a long time. And then I could see light at the top of the escalator, this gorgeous, incredible bright white light. So for me, there was no tunnel, which a lot of people experience. I just went up an escalator, and at the top of it, I just stepped like 1 foot off the top of the escalator, and all these, this is going to make me cry now, all these people rushed in that I just love the best in the world. And it was interesting because many of them had passed on, it was grandparents and a lot of different people. There were also angels. There just were so many people. And some of them are incarnated, but it must have been their higher self. And they just came all around me and gave me this tremendous group hug and this big infusion of energy. And gave me a very clear choice and said, you can go back. You're going to have a successful surgery. It's not going to be fun or easy. You've got some real stuff to clean up in this lifetime, but do you want to go back? Do you want to have this baby? And I also had a toddler at home who I absolutely adored, who was only, my older daughter was only about 18 months old. And I said, absolutely, I want to go back. So they gave me all this energy and they were very specific. They said, you can't go any further here at home, you won't be able to go back. And so they just spun me around and I went back down the down escalator back into my body.
And do you feel that that whole experience was planned before birth as part of your life plan?
It may have been, Simon. I'll have to think about that. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm hearing no, I didn't plan that. It just was something anatomically that came up, something physically that came up and was just a very challenging experience. But at least I had the wonderful benefit of having that very positive experience of having that infusion of love and having that that guidance come in and that connection made.
It sounds like it was really healing for you in a way.
It was. Just to know that we've got that tremendous love and support there for us, just with no judgment. You can't make a mistake. You can't do it wrong. You've got eternity to learn. You've got just everything you need. That changes everything. I feel that can lift anxiety and depression, just plague our society. And what a game changer it is to really know that.
So you had an opening of your Kundalini life force energy.
Yes, I did.
I don't really know what that means, to be honest.
Kundalini, we've all got a certain amount of life force energy. And we're able to really expand it as we meditate and raise our vibration and do different things. And there's a specific type of energy. I believe it's a Sanskrit word, Kundalini. And so it's just this very powerful energy, and it's part of raising our vibration along with aligning with our higher self and balancing any karma, is to be able to open our Kundalini, our life force energy, more fully. Because if you think of how we come from the light, which is my belief, and you know, lots of great research and stories and books about that. And if we are able to remove anything that's not light, you know, we're able to remove what's not love, essentially, if we're able to release the anxiety, the guilt, the fear, the depression, the pain, the disease, the things that are holding us back that are not light, we're opening more and more of our life force energy, our Kundalini, and just returning to being the light beings that we're meant to be. So there are Kundalini meditations, there are Kundalini teachers, a lot of them are yoga teachers, and they just really help people balance their energy and increase that light within them and just deal with their stuff, just get rid of, back to that baggage analogy. So what I did was I chose to do a Kundalini meditation. And when you really get your Kundalini to rise, a lot of people have a very major experience of, you can just feel the energy for the first time really shoot up your spine and up out the top of your head. So I was just sitting cross-legged on my bedroom floor, which was kind of funny because that's not how I usually meditate. I usually meditate lying down, or occasionally I'll meditate sitting up in a chair or sitting up on the couch. So it's really weird to me that I'm like, oh, why do I feel like I'm supposed to meditate sitting on the floor cross-legged? I don't normally do that. But that's how I was meditating that day. And I think it was to help me get more grounded. Because so much energy shot up out of the top of my head. I could really feel my crown chakra at the top of my head. It felt like it just blew wide open with so much energy that I looked up at the ceiling of my bedroom and I'm like, oh my gosh, I see the whole sky. I see everything outside. And then I got really practical, and this is going to sound so funny. I'm like, how am I going to explain that to my insurance agent? Because I'm going to need the homeowners to pay for, there's this big hole in my roof. For about 30 seconds, I was absolutely convinced that there was this huge hole in my bedroom roof, which just sounds so ridiculous and funny now. But that's how much energy moved and how I could suddenly like see outside and just see the skies and just see like way, way up. So it was just this very powerful movement of energy up.
It does sound very powerful. It almost sounds like you, for a short time, you had access to your full soul viewpoint of the world.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, so you've got an upcoming novel. Is it called The Flow One, Plymouth Plantation?
Exactly right, yes.
And could you give us an overview of that?
Sure. It's about a ghost. I see ghosts as being stuck energy when we drop our body. My belief is our soul is meant to go on home, and not all souls do. They can just be too focused on looking back and can be having regrets or don't want to leave loved ones or just feel like it wasn't their time, whatever the reason is. So it's a story about a ghost from the 1600s that chooses to remain earthbound for several hundred years. And it's the story of a woman named Anne Warren Little, who in the 1600s went from England over to America as one of the early colonials in 1623 on one of the original Mayflower ships, because there were a series of ships that had traveled over. There wasn't just the one Mayflower in 1620. And Anne tells the story of her childhood in England and then her journey to colonial America aboard the ship, which took several months and was really unpleasant. And just had a lot of memories and details come through about that. And then she spent most of her lifetime, 50 plus years, living at Plymouth Plantation in what's now Massachusetts in the U.S., and tells about her death in 1676 during King Philip's War, which was a war between the Native Americans and the colonials. And she dropped her body in that war when she was in her 60s as a widow. Her husband had passed on, and she had a large number of children and grandchildren, and she just refused to go home. And then some very interesting things happened from there. What it took to actually get that ghost to go home. And again, it's another story of forgiveness, because she had not gone home because she was waiting for, a man that she had met. It was actually the sea captain that had brought her over on the ship, and she had misinterpreted their relationship and thought that they were meant to be together. And the last thing he ever said to her was, you know, wait for me, we're going to be together. So she then misinterpreted that, and all the confusion of an unexpected sudden death in wartime, when she hadn't been expecting to go home, it was all ripe for what leads to a ghost. And then it concludes with how she did finally get home to the light.
You've got another nonfiction book coming, another regression healing book?
Yes. Regression Healing 2 is going to be called Joe and Marilyn. And to my great surprise, I had a Joe DiMaggio, the very well-known baseball player in the U.S., had a client with profound memories of Joe, who did multiple past life regressions, and also a Marilyn Monroe client who did two sessions. And Marilyn and Joe had a complex relationship, but they were married briefly and then also were friends for many years before and after the marriage. So that will be the next book.
And your current book is available on a lot of places, isn't it? Amazon.
Amazon is the best place, and it's in Kindle and paperback. And I just finished recording the audiobook version. So it's also on audible.com.
And can you give us the name of that book?
It's The Regression Healing One, the Huntsman, the Lord High Mayor, and the World War II Soldier.
Fantastic. And can you give us your website?
Yes, it is my name. So it's www.wendyrosewilliams.com.
And people can contact you through that website if they want to.
That would be fantastic. I would love to hear from people that way. And there's some radio interviews on there that may be of interest to try and help people connect with their guides and just understand how astrology and numerology and just different things can assist them with their journey.
Thanks for giving us your time and coming onto the Past Lives podcast.
My absolute pleasure.
I didn't mean to ask you questions that might make you tearful.
No, and please don't apologize. And I'm actually glad that that came up, because I think NDEs are just such a powerful thing as our past life regressions. And I think it's really, really good that we go through that and just release that emotion. So thank you for that opportunity. And thank you so much for your time today, Simon, and for the wonderful work you're doing with your podcast. I really enjoy your podcasts.
And that was a great interview with Wendy Rose Williams. And if you enjoy the podcast, you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favorite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. Thanks for listening.